The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the board, staff, underwriters, and donors of Voice of Vashon. And welcome to Adventures in Recovery. I'm Tom Walston, your host for the next half hour. I truly am looking forward to spending 30 minutes with you each and every Tuesday at 1:30 on Voice of Vashon, while we explore the many ways in which we can recover and move toward having a happier life. My background includes working for the past 15 to actually 20 years or so as a substance use disorder clinical supervisor. I've had the good fortune to work at Vashon Youth and Family Services for over 5 years now, alongside several committed therapists and clinicians that are passionate about their work. Founded in 1977, VYFS offers a thriving community of emotionally healthy and resilient children, youth, adults, and families. They serve Vashon's most vulnerable populations and communities, particularly those who face systemic barriers to accessing services or belong to groups historically excluded from resources, recovery, and power. Services and programming they offer include infant mental health, child, youth, and family counseling, seniors counseling, Hispanic and Latinx support services, case management, substance use disorder assessment and treatment, homeless prevention, medical and ferry vouchers, and emergency financial assistance. Today we're going to be talking about how one defines recovery. Well, one definition is the action or process of regaining possession or control of something stolen or lost. Recovery is a process of change through which individuals improve their health and wellness, live a self-directed life, and strive to reach their full potential. How recovery goes beyond just dealing with substances? Well, after all, let's face it, we're all recovering from something. Actually, I am a person in long-term recovery from years of substance abuse. And one's recovery could also be from past emotional and or physical scars as well. And it could be, well, let's say grief, the loss of a parent or someone close, even a pet. It could be grieving the loss of a job, etc., etc., etc. How about recovery from a personal injury, physical or emotional injury? Or how about recovering from being abused, whether it be emotional, physical, or sexual? How about recovering from abandonment issues? Well, with me today is my guest, Debbie Tone, and I've had the pleasure of knowing Debbie not only as a friend, but colleague as well for the past several years, probably 20 years, I would guess. Wouldn't you say, Debbie?
I would believe that's about correct, yes.
Well, welcome, Debbie. We love having you here at Vashon. And would you mind sharing with our audience what some of your life experiences have been in relation to recovery?
Thank you for having me, Tom. So I have been involved in the recovery community actively, well, I would have to guess 40 years because I came in as a member of Al-Anon. I was married to an alcoholic at the time, and I was young. And so I kind of started on a journey there that quickly led me to a different life choice. Later on down the line, I was doing volunteer work at the local juvenile hall as a CASA, guardian ad litem, and I became interested in recovery overall because a lot of the children and family that were on my caseloads Addiction was a huge factor. And what I was finding, and this was in, I'd say probably 2002, 2003, a lot of the families, they didn't have a family member that was capable of taking these children or taking placement of the children. So I saw a huge need for not only avoiding chemical dependency, but a need for access to treatment. And so that's kind of what started me on my journey. I had already been in a 25-year career as a grocery broker, so I was already established. I was fortunate enough at 45 years old to go back to school, get another degree. I ended up getting a BA in chemical dependency, and I have worked in that field starting as an intern ever since. So I have been in the field for 20 years. Most recently, since 2016, I was in private practice, but I have done everything from an internship to just a group counselor to a treatment director to a clinical supervisor, and I went into private practice in 2016. There again, I kind of saw a void in the field, and my specialty was individual sessions, and the only way you're going to get that is in private practice because the therapists just don't have time in the bigger agencies. So I was very successful at doing that. I loved it. My modality of treatment is motivational. And when I work with a client, they're typically a minimum of 6 months. I have always done a timeline. So I make each and every client go back through their entire life history. And it doesn't always have to be substance use disorder problems. There's a lot of codependency stuff, which could be on the Al-Anon side. A lot of unresolved grief and loss. And like Tom was just mentioning, hurts, habits, hangups, whatever it may be. There's lots of different programs of recovery. I kind of have always worked under the philosophy that recovery and addiction and the whole area to me has been an adverse reaction to something. If I choose to go gamble and the odds are I'm probably going to lose money, it's going to adversely affect my bank account. If I don't have a good program for health and wellness, it's going to adversely react. My physical could be safety and well-being. Obviously, the ingestion of drugs, alcohol, what other chemicals, an adverse reaction. I was kind of taught under the impression when I was first interning up that it was an allergic reaction. And I kind of thought, well, I don't really have an allergic reaction to things like that. I have an adverse reaction. And my mind could wrap that around it a lot better than other things. So when I kind of don't work a program of recovery myself, no matter what it may be, and I tend to get an adverse reaction from things, I rebound a lot quicker because I kind of have a plan of action when adversity is in the forefront. So that's kind of where I'm at and what I'm doing.
Well, that sums up a lot. And I especially like the way that you referred to hurts, habits, and hangups. I've never heard put quite that way, but it certainly sums it all up. Mm-hmm. Hurts, habits, and hangups.
Celebrate recovery.
That's right, and that's what we're all about. Mm-hmm. And in future weeks, we're going to be hearing from a lot of different people that are local residents here that have a lot of different avenues for healing. So going back to, I remember being at your graduation when you got your Bachelor of Arts.
Mm-hmm.
That was, I believe, at Highline.
Mm-hmm.
That was a big event.
That was a really big event because when you're 45 years old, Highline Community College is on a hillside and it's traipsing up and down the hillside of Des Moines trying to get to a math class and trying to get here and trying to get there. And not to mention working full-time inpatient, going to school 4 hours a day to finish my bachelor. And at the time, I had a significant other that had a medical issue that required some caregiving. So I look back and I'm thankful, grateful, and blessed because it wasn't an easy time, but I got through it. I had a plan of action, and it's been quite a journey ever since.
It has been a journey. And how about how we became friends? And that was a whole journey in itself, I think. We had the pleasure. Debbie is the one that got me into the field of recovery. And just for a little more disclosure, we worked at the very same, I don't think it was Debbie's first agency, but the first agency I worked at was an inpatient that was primarily, about 90% of the patients, it was all men's facility, about 90% of the patients were from Department of Corrections, DOC clients.
Correct.
And which, for your first agency you work at, is quite an eye-opener.
Yes, it is.
Yes, we had fun. Mm-hmm. It wasn't, I mean, there were some pretty intimidating characters there.
Yes.
But I'll tell you what, once you break through the wall that they would put up, mm-hmm. the tough wall, these people, there were some great guys there. And it was a very interesting experience. And we had kind of an interesting program director there too, did we not?
Yes, we did. Who I ended up being his treatment director. So things do go full circle. But that time, that place, that space, that day, that era, we could seriously probably write a movie about it because a lot of it is from the hip. I learned how to do groups with 45. We've had 42 to 45 patient clients. So when we did group sessions, there, you know, we did groups, there was 42 to 45 people in one room. My stature, I'm on radio, so you can't see me, but I'm 5'2 and weigh 125 pounds. And my first day in the groups, I pulled out a chair. I made everybody sit in a circle. I stood up on the chair and I just said, hi. And my treatment director put me in the room and shut the door and said, figure it out. So here, the first thing I had to establish was who was boss. So I stood up on a chair. I said, hi, my name is Deborah and I'm the counselor and, you know, treat me right and I'll treat you right. And I'm here to learn. And they knew I was an intern. And to this day, do you know that I still have, it gives me goosebumps. If you could hear, you'd see them. I still have people that get a hold of me. I still have clients that call me and thank me. And this was in 2002, 2003. That is 20 years ago right there. But I had to establish, and you know, I've never had a problem with a client. My office was the size of a small bathroom and I went and got myself a bistro table and two chairs. So I sat up really high. And so sitting down, we were the same height. And I mean, my first 10 minutes was, hi, Bob. And Bob would go, hi. And I go, what are you here for, Bob? Well, I robbed a bank 3 times and did this, that, and everything else. I'm like, cool, okay, well, let's get on with recovery. I minimized whatever he did, but I did say, and you may notice we're both the same size in these chairs. And then I just kind of giggle. I never had a problem. I have the most beautiful artwork that they gave me. They gave me, you know, they would bring trinkets and gifts. And I mean, I'm now dealing with some of their grandchildren that far back. Wow. You know, so I mean, I've made lifelong, I can't say we're social friends, but I have people that still keep in touch with me. And those were the best days ever. I was scared to death, but I considered a day and laugh about it. And I know that it made a difference in my world. And I know for a fact it made a difference in theirs. And I still get that. I still have a lot of people that keep in contact and I welcome it. Yep. When you know a person that well to that depth, when you've gone through an entire life history and paid attention to that person, it's life-changing. And I did it, and I've done it with thousands of people.
And those are the reasons we got into this field.
Right.
Because it certainly wasn't for the money.
No, back then it was not for the money. Not at all.
But,
no.
You know, thinking back to the early days, we would actually have a lot of fun with those guys.
Mm-hmm.
Because as counselors, they would make us take them for their recreation. Mm-hmm. The recreation consisted of getting a group of all the guys, 40 to 55 guys,
mm-hmm.
and making them take a walk through downtown Sumner.
Correct.
That was their recreation break. Well, I used to kid around with them and have some fun. Whenever we would get to an intersection, I'd say, okay, guys, you need to line up 2 by 2. When we cross the intersection, I want you all to hold hands. Half of them would look at me like, you got to be out of your gourd. And I'd say, I'd give them a minute to think about it. And I'd say, okay, I'm just kidding. Mm-hmm. Come on, let's cross the street like normal adults.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, these guys were great. And like you said, it's so rewarding to see the growth. And not everybody makes it, let's face it. Mm-hmm. But the ones that do, I mean, it's hard to not get into a life of recovery when the seeds have all been planted.
Mm-hmm.
And if nothing else, you obtain a lot of life skills.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do you deal with your anger now? You know, there are options. You don't have to just beat somebody up.
Right.
And you can walk away. And all these different lessons that people learn as part of recovery. And then after that, you continued to go into, I believe you went over to their women's facility, is that
mm-hmm.
right?
Correct. I worked at both sides, men's and women's, and then we had a co-ed for a while. And then I got that experience from the ground up, and then to me it became more personalized, and I went on to management at a small outpatient facility. And then from there, went to a couple different facilities, but basically ended up in private practice. Yeah.
And at about that same time, we had a fork in the road as far as my career, because I ended up going from that particular inpatient facility to Tacoma Detox.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, and that was an eye-opener too, because mm-hmm. you're seeing people pretty much at their where they've bottomed out.
Mm-hmm.
But they're seeking help, and you got to get them over one hump before they can start dealing with some other ones. And right across the hall, we had what was called the Sobering Center. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And in Tacoma, it was funded by the police department, and it was funded by a couple of other agencies in Tacoma. But it was designed to have a safe place for street people that were totally intoxicated to get them off the streets.
Mm-hmm. Safe place.
Yeah. It was a safety issue. Yeah. And yeah. because when you're that vulnerable and you're passed out on the street, you're game for anything.
Yeah.
And so people would come to the door at night. We would have to go answer the door at detox when they'd push the button. Mm-hmm. We were in the same building. And unfortunately, there were some people we would have to turn away because they weren't drunk enough.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yeah, isn't that crazy?
The criteria
yeah.
was they had to be pass out almost drunk before
right.
they could get a cot
right.
inside, and we would monitor them all night long, take their blood pressure and check their heart rate. Some would go into seizures on occasion
mm-hmm.
as they would start to detox, but it was a real gift to the community,
mm-hmm.
and it showed a lot of respect for people that were living with the disease of alcoholism.
Mm-hmm. And the strain on the resources.
Exactly, because it freed up a lot of beds mm-hmm. at the emergency rooms
mm-hmm.
that other people would be waiting for that might have been almost fatal car accident or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But it gave people a safe place to bed down for the night.
Mm-hmm.
And I really kind of wish they still had that. They don't offer that anymore. So, but the trends have changed so much too in recovery.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, back when you and I started, it was mostly... Well, it was some meth, but it was mostly alcohol
mm-hmm.
and occasionally some heroin. It was before the huge opioid crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really gone off the charts.
Well, and as popular as weed is, it really wasn't that prevalent in treatment. It was more, like you say, in this area, because I've only worked in Washington in recovery, it was alcohol and methamphetamine.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I know you've counseled countless clients on how to be successful with substance use disorders, but I'm curious about your opinion about the connection between dependence and abusing a substance with there being an emotional component that could be connected or perhaps the reason for one's self-medicating. And you did cover a lot of it with just the three H's.
Well, a lot of that, I was talking to a client. I was involved in an intervention last week. There is so much more of a focus now on mental health than there was even 20 years ago when we first started. 20 years ago doesn't seem like that long ago, but it truly is. And there's been a lot of different avenues that we've gone down in treatment. As far as mental health diagnosis, it can be anything. Prior to an addiction problem, is it the result of an addiction problem? So as clinicians, when we are working with clients, obviously going back through any kind of a history, those kind of things will come up. A lot of it was overlooked, but I can confidently say 99% of the time when I would have a client come in whose primary drug of choice was methamphetamine, as a clinician, I could pretty much guarantee that there was either a diagnosed or an undiagnosed ADHD or some kind of hyperactivity mental health disorder that had either been treated or not treated. And you can kind of tell by the drug of choice by people what the affliction or addiction could be, or it could be the result of an undiagnosed addiction or affliction. So it... With the opioids and now with the fentanyl and all that stuff, that's kind of a whole different... We dealt more with heroin, I think, if we were dealing with that, or older drugs, Quaaludes and things like that that had different names to them per se, but they're still, same classification of drugs. It's not necessarily a personality disorder. We do what we do as the result, because of the result or the outcome that we are seeking to feel.
Yeah.
So, you know, I tend to be a little wound up anyway. I'm probably on the spectrum somewhere, but never diagnosed. But I can tell you that, you know, I prefer to be happy and moving than sleeping all day. That's not my thing. Some people absolutely adore that. So it can be a personality type. But our habits, hurts, hangups, afflictions, addictions, however you want to refer to it, a lot of time are the direct result of what are we trying to take care of? What are we trying to forget? What are we trying to mask? What are we trying not to feel? We go to what makes us feel good. So whatever that might look like, it could be shopping, it could be a million different things. There's a million different hurts, habits, and hangups. But we tend to get our needs met and by whatever avenue we can. And for some of us, it includes self-medicating. Even if there is a diagnosis, they still tend to self-medicate. Some of us just can never get enough, and enough is never too much.
Yep, exactly. And there are plenty of ways out there to self-medicate. In fact, I mean, let's look at the role that the media plays in that.
Yeah.
Just the liquor ads and the beer ads. You know, you see especially if you're into sporting events, watching them on television, there's so many beer commercials.
Mm-hmm.
But I really wish they would keep the cameras rolling for another hour or two, and mm-hmm. after when everybody's having fun on the beach with the beer and this and that. Well, let's keep the cameras rolling to where the vomiting starts.
Yeah, then the fight breaks out.
The fights break down. The people, their volume getting louder when they're talking an inch from your ear. The spit coming out. Not everyone's like that, granted. Mm-hmm. But some of us, I don't drink anymore because I couldn't drink.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, one is just going to prime the pump, and that's just part of my story. I tell people, too, in the past that I didn't have a problem with cocaine either. I just like to smell it every day.
Right.
And but we all have our thing. For some people, it's and now it's even gaming
mm-hmm.
or television.
Mm-hmm. Social media.
Social media. Oh, my God, I can go down that rabbit hole sometimes, too, myself. It's like, mm-hmm. oh, my God, an hour's gone by, and I've basically gone through my friend list or what have you.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. So another question, because we're going to be wrapping it up here in just a few minutes, and I want to be able to save enough time to let you folks know who we have coming in next week. But there's resources out there for family members looking for support, caring for a loved one with a substance use disorder. And I know oftentimes I'll get a call from a family member saying, my kid needs help, or my husband or my wife or whoever really needs help. But the bottom line, as you well know, is
gotta want it.
Do they want the help?
Mm-hmm.
Because unfortunately there's another group called Al-Anon comes into play. You know, what are you doing to possibly enable the person's using? Or,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I mean, it's a family disease. But there is hope.
Mm-hmm.
There is hope, and there's so many more opportunities out there for recovery. And it's not just 12-step groups. There's many, many paths to recovery. If you're more prone to, I mean, there's the Red Road to Wellbriety for our Native American people that mm-hmm. a lot of us can relate to, because it deals more with Mother Earth than mm-hmm. grandfather. In fact, at future episodes of this show, we'll be talking to people from the possible new inpatient treatment facility here on Vashon.
Nice.
Thunderbird. But there's also Smart Recovery.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a non-12-step organization. It's an acronym. It stands for... I just drew a blank.
It's a more philosophical approach to recovery.
Exactly.
And that is more a lot of evidence-based as opposed to behavioral. It's, I think, probably tends to draw a more intellectual crowd, although any doors are open to anybody at any time.
That's right. You could be sitting around the table for one person dealing with alcohol abuse. The next person sitting right next to them could be a chronic gambler mm-hmm. Seeking recovery. Next one could be a lover sex addict. I mean, it goes on and on, but mm-hmm. they're all about making positive behavioral changes. And, you know, we're all in this together.
Mm-hmm. This would be an easy time to be an atmospheric drinker, because if you go into the grocery stores now, where it used to be just the beer aisle, you know, and then a few shelves of wine, it's endless with the White Claws and the infusions and the fusions and the this and the that and the glasses and the smashers and the all these herbs and all this stuff. There are some hellacious concoctions that are absolutely fantastic, non-alcoholic. It doesn't have to all be alcoholic, but if you're an atmospheric type social drinker, wow, there's a lot of choices in this day and age. It didn't used to be that way like it is right now. A third of the grocery store is, and they're coming out into the aisles building these huge displays, and it's just very enticing, and it's put out there as being very social, but it's deadly. I mean, they still have alcohol in them, you know?
Oh, exactly. Well, one tip, you know, if a person is going to a social event, and there's plenty of them around in the summertime, if you're a person that wants to perhaps reduce or stop your alcohol intake, just have something in your hand, a bottle of water.
Yeah.
I mean, it could be a club soda. Throw a lime in it, and people will think it's a gin and tonic or something.
Nobody's going to ask.
But again, and quite frankly, it's nobody's business, but you want to be able to feel comfortable, and that's the way you're going to be able to fit in. Because I'll tell you what, around recovery, I mean, there's so much stigma attached to it all. You know, if I'm in a social function, say, what would you like for a drink? It's like, oh, just give me a Diet Coke. Why?
Yeah.
Well, because I don't drink. Oh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
What's wrong? It's like, I'm the sick one.
Yeah.
You know, but you know, like I said, it's nobody's business. I mean, some people like to say, well, I'm on medication, or my doctors have advised against it. And in other words, just, you know, keep walking.
Yeah, exactly.
Speaking of social events that do not require or that do not include alcohol, we got Recovery Day coming up at a Mariners game. They do this every single year, except they stopped it during COVID, but it's back on. It is going to be September 15th. It's a 1 o'clock game with the Mariners versus the Texas Rangers. And if you want more information on this, you can just go to the Mariners website, and tickets are only $25. And there's a whole section that's going to be about probably up to 5,000 to 7,000 people all in recovery.
That's a huge turnout.
It's an incredible event. Plus you get a free Recovery Day with the Mariners T-shirt while they last, but go in. Tickets, like I said, $25. It's a great family event. In fact, they have somebody in recovery that throws out the first pitch, and if you buy more than 20 tickets, your group name or your family name will be displayed on the scoreboard following the third inning.
Nice.
Yeah. So, Debbie, I just want to say you have been an absolute joy to have on you. I couldn't think of a better person for my very first show here at Voice of Ashon. And so thanks for coming.
Thank you for thinking of me, and thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much. And by the way, folks, next week we have a woman that's going to be here. Her name is Robin, and talk about fascinating careers. She trains dogs how to be, well, guide dogs, service dogs.
Emotional support.
Nice. It's going to be a fascinating conversation with Robin, who will be here next week with us on every Tuesday at 1:30. Folks, thanks for tuning in. Thanks for listening to Voice of Ashon. Have a great day.